Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Volition Rx, a multinational epigenetics company revolutionizing cancer diagnosis with the development of simple, easy-to-use, cost-effective blood tests involving a range of cancers and other diseases. Volition's clinical trials in human health have shown promising results in detecting several cancer types, including colorectal, lung, and a variety of blood-borne cancers. Volition Rx. Web address, volition.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hope Patel, Mars. Episode N, David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show is here. And we're traveling 12,000 years before present to Chile, to the high desert of Chile called the Atacama Desert. And our guide is Professor Peter Schultz, Pete Schultz, a professor emeritus, Brown University's Department of Earth, Environmental, and Planetary Sciences. The professor assures me there is the good likelihood that human beings have settled in this area 12,000 years before right now, along with other megafauna. And then one day, Professor, a very good evening to you. Your presentation is as exciting as the passing of the dinosaurs. What is it that you're presenting in Geology Magazine that is very likely to have been an event that left very few signs except yours 12,000 years ago and this moment in Chile? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening. Nice to be here.
And the event, can you describe that moment, Professor? What you think happened?
Well, we think somewhere between 11,500 years ago and 12,300 years ago, there was one of these events that was just striking. There were fireballs that came from the sky and exploded. And in the process of doing that, it literally fused, melted the soils, and turned them into these slabs of glass. But it wasn't just that. The other thing that happened is that there was a massive wind associated with the objects coming down. And this wind literally picked up the glasses that had formed, rolled them around, rolled them on the ground like a snowball, where it picked up other material, other soils, even some plant material, trapped them inside. And this happened in about four or five different places along a 75-kilometer corridor along the edge of the Atacama Desert. It's in the Atacama Desert, but it's on the lower desert. It's still very, very dry, but not at that time. At that time, it may have been very different with streams and trees and plants. But this would have been something that would have been, let's just say, a barbecue.
A barbecue. David?
How do you know it was a comet and not an asteroid? And was it an airburst, or did it actually hit the ground?
It never hit the ground. It was an airburst. And we know this because we've looked everywhere for the crater. We cannot find any evidence of it. And the way it's distributed in these different areas, we know that they were concentrated. And in addition, we know that the temperatures were so high, it actually fused and melted zircon, dissociated into different components, zirconium oxide and silicon dioxide. So we know it was extremely hot. Now, how do we know it was a comet? Well, the keen eye of my associate, Scott Harris from Fernbank Science Center, he was looking at this with a scanning electron microscope and noticed that there were strange minerals, not just a single mineral, but assemblages of minerals. And these were very unusual. Somehow they survived, and I can tell you how, but somehow they survived. And these minerals have the composition that indicates they came from a very primitive body, something called a CI chondrite. But then with further examination and from some future publications that came out along the way, it turns out that the most likely candidate was a comet. And why we would know this is because Stardust brought back material from a comet. This spacecraft brought back cometary debris from little bits of debris from this comet in the NASA Stardust mission. And they caught the stuff in aerogel and then have been examining it ever since. Well, it turns out this stuff looks very similar to that. In addition, there have been some experiments done, and they indicate that the only way it could form would be from the comet. Having said that, I need to make a distinction. There are live comets and there are dead comets. The live comets are the ones we see with a big tail coming through the sky. Dead comets are basically cometary bodies masquerading as asteroids. But they become very soft, very spongy, if you will, rubble piles. And so it's possible this was one of those dead comets. But my money, the way we think this may have come in, that my money is that this was something that broke up, very similar to Shoemaker-Levy when it slammed into Jupiter, that this may have been one of those types of events.
We're looking at the high desert of northern Chile. And we need to describe what this terrain looks like, because if this happened 12,000 years ago, people have been looking at this area for a long time, puzzling what they're seeing on the ground. The photographs that are provided by Brown University help a little bit. It looks like a wasteland, not unlike another planet, say the planet Mars. We see pictures all the time that have strewn small pieces. And now on Mars, it looks like it's the remains of rock. You're saying all those dark features that I'm seeing on this desert floor, those are all twisted glass, Professor?
Yes, and that one panoramic view you're showing, those pieces that look like they're craggly pieces of volcanic glass, are actually the glasses that were produced by this event. And in fact, when we're there, it looks so much like Mars. In fact, I published a paper where I suggested that even Mars may have a lot of glass strewn across the surface, but we just haven't been able to identify them completely.
This region that we're looking at right now, preserving this glass, you've mentioned, and in the article you say, the conditions are right for preservation. What are those conditions, Professor?
Very dry. I mean, very little rain happens over the entire year, and this has been, it has been that way for a long time. We even found the hoof of a burrow embedded nearby, actually, and I dated that, and that was 500 years, and it was just sitting on the surface. So this, what we're seeing is a fossilized landscape. The difference is this only goes back to maybe 12,000, 13,000 years, in contrast to Mars that goes back billions of years. So it's a fossil surface.
David?
Does the glass have any kind of commercial value or anything like that to it? And what about the folklore in the area? How do they explain it?
Well, in answer to your first question, there's no value in terms of economic value at all. Any meteoric material in there is really dust. It's not like big fragments. And in terms of a collector value, I have no idea, but my big fear is that collectors will destroy the site. And that's already happening, and that's very sad, because we need everything preserved in place in order to fully understand the process and the story. There were people, but they were living at a higher altitude, and that's why they would have seen it, but I don't think they really experienced it. And realize that this is 8,000 years before the Bronze Age, or before the time, even in this area, where they were, you know, creating things like ceramics. So there's no way that this could be the result of any human or produced material, as are some of the sites that are more recent. It's very difficult to tell whether or not they were caused by something like this or actually caused by a process of humans, that is, some ceramics.
Let me try to imagine what this bolide did. Because the soil, this very dry soil, it's high, it's cold, it's dry, is made of sand. The comet provided like a forge, takes sand and turns it into glass. But this was done all of a sudden in moments, and the glass was twisted because of the wind that also struck at the same time. So there was actually a, what you'd say, a glass factory, 75-mile kilometer. Is that how you picture it, Professor?
Yep, that's right. And it was all from these events, these multiple events that happened almost at the same time. And so this is just hard to imagine. If I were a Native American that had moved down to this area, it would have been extremely frightening.
I would say so, and there were things here beforehand, and part of the, see, we're speculating a little bit, but David and I have recently talked to a geologist and a discovery in the Jordan River Valley, where an asteroid, a bolide, 3,500 years ago, struck all of a sudden and essentially vaporized a city, a large city, and everybody in it. So we're looking now, no city was vaporized, but a landscape was turned into glass, and what was there before? When we come back, we're talking to Professor Peter Schultz, Professor Emeritus, Brown University, Department of Earth, Environmental, and Planetary Sciences, of a discovery that's been there for 12,000 years, of where a comet struck, not an asteroid, a comet. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I've found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's Black Bean Burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.